The Investing Show, brought to you in association with the Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. For more information, please visit www.scottishmortgageit.com.
Welcome to The Investing Show, where we discuss ideas to help you make more of your money. I'm Simon Lambert of This Is Money. Joining me in the studio today, I've got Andrew Montlake of Coreco and Richard Hunter of Interactive Investor.
Simon.
Andrew, we are here today to talk about the soap opera. It's the British property market.
Yes.
There's always a hero, there's always a villain, and there's inevitably a plot twist around the corner. And currently the cliffhanger appears to be that house prices might potentially be sinking towards the point where they start falling. Can you give us a big picture of what's going on in the property market at the moment?
It is a really interesting environment at the moment, and it's definitely a buyer's market. Let's start with that. It is definitely a buyer's market. There are some really good deals to be done. The people who are moving now are generally the people who need to move. So under the sort of the £1 million mark, we're still seeing the usual criteria for people wanting to move is there. The demand is there. They're wanting to move because they're desperate to move out of home, or they're starting a family, they're moving to school catchment areas. All that type of demand is still there. But what's not happening is all the speculative movers, and that's where the market's a little bit dead. So some of the estate agents we speak to, actually they've got quite a few properties to sell, but they haven't got the buyers who are willing to move right now. And one of the main reasons is the dreaded B word, which is now banned from our office. We're not allowed to talk about Brexit. But that's definitely having an effect on people. All that uncertainty is striking through to them. And a lot of people are still saying, do you know what, I'm just going to wait and see what happens on March 29th.
Does that extend to the famous foreign buyers? Have they evaporated because of what might come out of the other side?
Well, that's really interesting. And actually, because sterling is weak, we've actually seen a return of some of the foreign buyers. So Americans are coming into the London market again. We've got a lot of Far East, Chinese. So actually for them, where they've got a currency play as well, it's quite cheap for them. And they're, because it's a buyer's market, they're able to do some deals. So we're starting to see that come back.
Now, every month we get a handful of property reports, property indices. We've got the Halifax, the Nationwide, the ONS house price figures, the Home Track report. Yeah. We've got the Right Move asking prices one. Inevitably, they all say something slightly different, although they do all tend to follow the same general trend.
Yeah.
The overall picture has been of what had been a reasonably sort of healthy inflation figure in house prices, 3-4% a year, now sinking down towards a kind of 2%, 1%. The Nationwide figures most recently were only just, I think, 0.5% or so. But that masks something else that's going on in the property market, doesn't it? Where the UK has no sort of overall real figure. It has lots of different markets, and there's still a reasonable amount of activity outside of London and the South East in the sort of major regional cities and the places where house prices lagged. Yeah. Is that something that's going to continue going, or do we think we're going to see the dreaded B word start to affect there now in the run-up to March 29th as people even there sit on their hands and go, well, do you know what, why don't I just wait?
I think outside London you've got more of those demand issues, well, not issues, the demand decisions that I talked about earlier. In terms of people wanting to get on the property ladder for different reasons. So that's why that type of area is quite bullish. They haven't really been affected by higher stamp duty or that kind of thing. So actually in the regions, it's still relatively healthy. And I think that will probably continue. That the only issue there is potentially if there is any kind of no deal, then all bets are off and we don't quite know what's going to happen. But what I suspect will happen is if you look at how the Brexit negotiations go and deals in Europe generally, there tends to be something happens in the 11th hour. And I think as soon as there is any semblance of a deal of any kind, actually you might see the reverse, because I think there is a lot of pent-up demand. And so potentially you could see a Brexit bounce. So all the people who are waiting, thinking, oh, property prices are going to fall after Brexit, might be very disappointed. Regionalisation generally is set to continue. I think you've already seen in London prices have fallen, certainly at the top end. But I think across the country you'll probably see a stable market for the rest of the year. So I reckon about 1-2% growth max, but still growth.
And I mean, presumably one of the reflections on the regional differences is obviously that houses are pretty expensive wherever you look compared to wages on historic levels, but they're not as expensive when you start going into the north and into those major regional cities.
Yeah.
And it might be that moving up a step up the ladder there costs you £50,000, whereas in London or the commuter belt it costs you £100,000 or £200,000, and it's a lot easier to make that jump when the gap is that bit smaller.
Yeah, there are a lot of commentators who get quite frustrated with the way that the news is presented sometimes, that it does seem you can't afford to buy anywhere, but that's not true. Across the country, there are some very affordable places where people can get on the housing ladder. They are finding it easier to save for a deposit, and house prices are a lot more normal, whereas London, the South East, tends to be held up as, if it's like this here, it must be true for the rest of the country. But that's not the case. There are affordable areas to buy at the moment.
What's the latest on the famous basic supply and demand situation, where we've been hearing, at least for some considerable time now, that quite simply there's a shortage of housing in the UK?
There is definitely a shortage of housing in the UK, and that has helped to keep property prices propped up. But again, it does depend area to area. Mm-hmm. There are some brokers I speak to way outside of London who are saying actually there's supply and demand is fine. Mm. In fact, there are some estate agents saying we've got the supply but we haven't got the demand. So it does change from region to region a lot. It's not quite as simplistic as saying it's all down to supply and demand, because there are other factors as well that come into play.
Of course. And underpinning all of this, we've got mortgage rates, which remain, despite the fact that the Bank of England has actually raised interest rates above 0.5% in recent times. Mortgage rates remain near historic lows, don't they?
Yeah, mortgage rates are incredibly competitive still. They're not quite as cheap as the real lows, but they're not far off. You can still get five-year fixes below 2%, about 1.79, 1.89. So it is still historically very cheap, especially when you compare it to rental costs. A lot of the time, actually, it's cheaper to pay a mortgage than it is to pay rent. And that's true both in the normal residential mortgage world and the buy-to-let world as well. We're seeing rates that we've never seen before in the buy-to-let world. So it is really cheap, and there's so much more competition from lenders to get that business.
And is this a product of mortgage lenders, you know, banks and building societies being relatively financially okay at the moment? They've recovered from their financial crisis problems, all but recovered from them. But they don't quite have the same number of people wanting to borrow the money as they might expect to, so they're having to keep those rates low in order to keep people coming through the door.
Yeah, there is that to a certain degree. Pricing generally is low, swap rates are low, so they can afford to keep their products low. But it really is competition. We've seen five or six new lenders come into the market in the specialist buy-to-let arena. More lenders are being more aggressive in the main residential area as well. So margins are being cut pretty tight for lenders at the moment. If you speak to lenders, they're bemoaning the fact that they have to price at such low levels, and they can't differentiate themselves in any other way. We're starting to see moves and changes in criteria whereby, for example, if you're self-employed or on a contract or you're purchasing a HMO property, that's where lenders can make a little bit more margin. But competition is absolutely intense. I can't remember a competitive period like this in the past, certainly not in the past 10 years.
Do you get the impression from your contacts and your expertise that any more pressure might be brought to bear on the buy-to-let market? I mean, obviously, we've had some recent moves. Perhaps, I don't know, by doing that, there might be some more release of supply, as we just discussed. But given your expertise, do you get that feeling at all?
I think they've probably gone far enough. I hope they've gone far enough, because landlords are feeling pretty battered and bruised at the moment, and a lot of the changes are still filtering through, especially with the tax changes, which were put over 4 years. I think next year, the next tax year, and the tax year after that, is going to be really interesting to see what buy-to-let landlords do, because a lot of them, I don't think a lot of them have educated themselves properly, if I'm honest, or taken proper tax advice as yet. And once they start filling in those tax returns and thinking, blimey, where's my money gone? I think you'll see some more landlords selling up. But it's definitely what we're seeing in that space is a professionalisation of the buy-to-let arena again. So the professional landlords doing it as a business, getting proper tax advice, probably buying in limited company names, they're going to do well. Whereas the amateur landlords, those with two or three properties who were potentially going to buy more, are probably just going to say, do you know what, enough's enough.
And one of the key differences with the buy-to-let tax on rental income is the fact that not only are people going to have their mortgage interest relief limited from the maximum, whatever tax rate they pay, from whether that's 40 or 45% down to this 20% tax credit, but it's that they're going to have their rental income added to their other income, which then decides their tax rate, and then they're going to get a tax credit against the mortgage, which has the ability to bump people up a tax bracket, doesn't it?
Correct.
And presumably, for some of those people, they're suddenly going to find themselves losing more money than they thought, because they might become higher rate taxpayers, or they might end up in that £100,000 to £120,000 level where they start getting their personal allowance taken off them and things like
that. Yeah, it affects all manner of things, especially that. And for some people, if they're getting benefits of any kind, like child benefit, that can be affected. A lot of people aren't aware of all this. So the first thing we say to any buy-to-let client is go and get some professional tax advice, first of all, because there are ways of doing it. We're seeing a lot more people now buying in limited company names, as I mentioned, because they think that's a better way of doing things. But even if you buy in limited company name, you have to understand what that means, what tax that then generates, because maybe it's easier at the front end, but at the back end, getting out of it, there could be some issues. So it's all about going into it with both eyes open, getting professional tax advice.
Buy-to-lets are a lot tougher now. Who's still doing it? Who is still investing in buy-to-let properties?
Well, we're still seeing the professionals, as I mentioned earlier, who it is their business, they understand it, and actually they think that this market at the moment is a good one for them. They can do deals in this market. We've got a lot of buy-to-let landlords who are sitting on cash waiting for the right property to come about. So the amateur landlords have definitely disappeared from the market. But what we are seeing is some of the wealthier people who are purchasing a buy-to-let and maybe thinking, do you know what, I can afford to buy now and then I can keep this property aside for my children. Because actually looking forward in the future, potentially my kids might find it more difficult to get on the housing ladder. So they're doing this now. They're not worried about the rental income. They've got the income to service the loan anyway. So we're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing a lot of future planning, whether that's for children's properties or for pension planning. So we're still seeing that come about.
And moving back to mortgages, obviously we've got the mortgages for people buying homes, but remortgaging is a pretty popular endeavour at the moment.
Yeah.
Thanks to the fact that interest rates are pretty low on mortgages. What sort of balance is there between the 2-year fix and the 5-year fix that you're seeing?
We're definitely seeing a switch towards the longer term fixes. As I said, if you can get a 5-year fix below 2% in any market, that's pretty good. And if you think about it, the only way really is up for interest rates now, barring any kind of disaster. But really, if you look forward in the future, we expect there'll be a couple of basis point rises every year for the next 2 or 3 years. So actually a 5-year fix is looking pretty good. So a lot of remortgage people are looking at 5-year fixes at the moment. We started to see 7- and 10-year fixes creep back in into the market. So there are still those to which 2-year fixes are suitable if you actually want some flexibility, or maybe a tracker rate with no penalties. I think we're seeing borrowers getting a little bit more sophisticated now. So people are becoming a bit more aware of other types of products, like an offset product, especially when it comes to remortgaging. They've reduced their loan a little bit. Their employment prospects are a bit better than when they first bought. They've got some cash aside, so maybe they'll take advantage of an offset product.
What about equity release? Seems to have been accompanied by a fair bit of television advertising at the moment, whatever the rights and wrongs of it may be. Are you seeing a pickup on that front?
It's definitely a pickup. It's still in its infancy. Mm. There are still a lot of brokers, actually, who just don't quite want to play in it yet because either they haven't got the right qualifications or they're not comfortable enough within it. Equity release is something, you have to go into with proper advice, with all your eyes open. There are now some new types of mortgages being released, which are retirement interest-only mortgages, which are not quite equity release. They're sort of a midway point between normal mortgage and an equity release mortgage. So in some circumstances, those are better. But if you're looking at any kind of equity release, you've got to take proper advice on that.
Sure.
From someone who is experienced not just in equity release, but can compare that market with the normal mortgage market as well.
And do you think that as we find more people coming to the end of interest-only mortgages that they haven't paid the balance off of, the big chunk of people who took out those mortgages, you know, in the early 2000s when lenders stopped properly checking that anybody had a means to pay them back, do you think that retirement interest-only mortgage market is going to take off the back of that, or do you think it will remain a niche product?
I can see it taking off. I think as their, it's a really interesting concept. I think actually we're seeing so many more people wanting to stay in their homes over the age of 65, so many more who are still working. And a lot of people actually, do you know what, they don't want to pay the... Downsizing now is a bit of a fallacy. To downsize, you still have to pay stamp duty. Usually, if you downsize, you're moving closer to city amenities, which means actually the property price is just as expensive as the one you might be moving from. So we are seeing more and more of that, and I think definitely it's a growing market. And building societies have been really quick to take up the mantle here, and a lot of them have now axed their maximum age limits. So I did a mortgage about 6 months ago for a 72-year-old, 25-year interest-only mortgage. But you could see he could pay the mortgage until death. It was easy in that respect. So it's definitely a growing market.
And just finally, before we finish, if you're a person who's been sat there thinking, well, maybe I do want to move home, but this whole Brexit thing's worrying me, but actually, do you know what? I want to go ahead with this now. I want to get moving, maybe get ahead of the leaving date, if we actually leave on that date. Get ahead of the point when everybody starts putting their property on the market for Easter. What would be your tips for those people?
I've always said don't try and play the property market. If it's right for you to move, if it's right for you to buy in your life, then just go ahead, because you don't know what's going to happen. I actually think it's a really good time to try and buy. It is a buyer's market. There are properties available. So it's just go and engage a good estate agent and a good mortgage broker and a good solicitor. They're like the Holy Trinity. And then you'll be in a good position to move. There are definitely some deals to be done now.
And do we expect there'll be that usual sort of spring rush of homes coming to the market?
I think so. I think it's interesting how this year has started. It started a lot busier and a lot more bullish than I thought it would. So I think it will. Everything comes under the big Brexit cloud because we just don't know what's going to happen. So that could change everything. But I think if you leave that to one side and assume a deal will be done, then there's no reason to believe that all that pent-up demand, people have sat there doing nothing for so long, they have to get on with their lives. So actually, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic, a good way to be. That's all we've got time for. Andrew, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Richard, thank you very much. And thank you very much. Join us next time on The Investing Show. Goodbye.
for The Investing Show, brought to you in association with the Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. For more information, please visit www.scottishmortgageit.com.